हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 35, Sutra 1414. The qualities of Brahman are described in the following words, Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.1. Shad eva som yedam. O gentle one, in the beginning was the eternal Brahman. Also in these words, Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.3. Tad aikshata ba shyam. He thought, I shall become many. The truth of Brahman is also described in the following words, Taittiriya Upanishad 6.2.3. Tat tejo shrita. Then he created light. The relationship between cause and effects in regard to Brahman will be described later on. The words Atma, Akasha, Prana, Sat, and Brahman mean all-pervading, all-effulgent, all-powerful, the supreme existence, and the greatest, respectively. Okay, so that means Atma means all-pervading, effulgent means Akash, all-powerful means Prana, the supreme existence, Sat, and the greatest is Brahman. These words are very appropriate as names for Brahman. In the same way, the statement Sa Aikshata, he thought, is very appropriate for Brahman. Bhagavatam, verse reference. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.24.60. My dear Lord, the impersonal Brahman spreads everywhere, like the sunshine or the sky. And the impersonal Brahman, which spreads throughout the universe, and which the entire universe is manifested, is you. Right? So we're getting this point that the Brahman is what pervades everywhere, and it's what the whole material creation is based on. Right, it's not like the Mayavadis are saying that Brahman, having no qualities, it's just existing there and it has nothing to do with anything else. But it's actually the whole creation is coming from Brahman. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it is the basic. So even though there's the aspect of the static aspect, it's still, because it's Krishna, then he's thinking, he's expanding, he's doing all this. But he's doing it through the impersonal aspect. Right? Srila Prabhupada in his purport explains that although Brahman is spread throughout the cosmic manifestation, the absolute truth is a person and is the topmost realization. So Krishna thinks he may carry things out through Brahman or Paramatma, or he may do things himself directly. But the point is that he is the three. It's not that they're separate. It's not that Brahman's separate from Krishna. It's his effulgence. It's non-different. So it's another aspect of Krishna. So Brahman, Bhagavan being the topmost realization, it's not that Brahman and Paramatma are all also progressive realizations. Right. But as you progress, then it includes the last. So Paramatma includes Brahman, and Bhagavan includes Brahman and Paramatma. In Vedic literatures, it is said that everything is Brahman and nothing else. The whole cosmic manifestation rests on the Brahman effulgence. The impersonalist, however, cannot understand how such a huge cosmic manifestation can rest on a person. Thus, this inconceivable power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not understood by the impersonalist. Therefore, they are puzzled and always denying that the absolute truth is a person. Right? So, it's because they're working by their limited intelligence that they can't accept. Because by intelligence, how does a person include everything, unlimited. How is a person unlimited? Because if you have a person, there's a form. There seemingly is a, a space, a limitation, a measurement. Right? But what's not understood is that that's just his potency. Right? Because we see his mother Jashoda tries to tie a rope around him. She can't. Doesn't matter how many ropes, because how do you tie a rope around unlimited? So that's the Lord, is that he's unlimited, but he has a form. Right? And the form is, and that this is the fun part, the form's the original. Right? That's actually the original. And then from the person, they expand locally, and their effulgence is the Brahman. So that's the thing, is he's unlimited, but he's there because of his Shakti. That's the meaning, one of the meanings of Maya, is, you know, that by which you measure. Right? So therefore, then, for human size, then he comes that size, but he can come any size he likes. You understand? So the unlimited aspect is the person is unlimited. And then the impersonal form of unlimited is Brahman. Right? Not that the impersonal is the unlimited and the person's limited. No, the person's unlimited. So there's the personal unlimited, there's the localized unlimited, and there's the impersonal unlimited. All three features of Krishna. Mm. So, yeah.
Maharaj, then is it that the Sankhya followers do not accept?
Be a little louder.
Is it that the Sankhya followers do not accept Bhagavatam, because in Bhagavatam, when these pastimes like Damodar Leela and others have been mentioned, then they should accept that being a person, he can be unlimited also at the same time.
Whether the what's the technical way? The Shankaras or the
Sarikavash.
Sarikyas. But the Sharikyas, those are the followers of Shankya.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So, you know, whether they understand or not, they can't understand because they're not devotees. So whether they accept Bhagavatam or not, that's another thing that I can't say. But the point is because they're not devotees, they won't be able to understand the Lord anyway. Because the Upanishads are explaining about the position of the Lord. They don't understand from there. So the basic point is they don't understand from anywhere. You understand? They have their own philosophy. Because being material, not being connected to the internal potency of the Lord, they can't understand the Lord. The wrong impression is cleared by Lord Shiva himself, who says that the impersonal Brahman, which is spread all over the universe, is nothing but the Supreme Lord himself. Here it is clearly said that the Lord is spread everywhere, just like the sunshine, by virtue of his Brahman feature. Right? Means there's the sun, and then it's spread everywhere as the sunshine. The sunshine is coming from the sun. Not that the sun comes from the sunshine. Right? Because that's how Mayavadis will say. There's the Brahman and then there's the form and goodness. Right? But no, it's the form, it's the sun that makes the sun shine. So many sons, yeah. Here it is clearly said that the Lord is spread everywhere, just like the sunshine, by virtue of his Brahman feature. This example is very easy to understand. All the planetary systems are resting upon the sunshine. Yet the sunshine and the source of sunshine are aloof from the planetary manifestations. So here's that you have the planetary systems. It's without the sunshine, then they can't function. But the sunshine is separate, and the source of that sunshine is separate. So Krishna and his three features are aloof from the material creation, even though the material creation is, what's the word he says here? Resting upon it. Does that make sense? That's their support. Does this make sense? Yes.
So what they might do, basically, they reverse the cause and effect. They say that the effect is the cause.
Yes, yes. Because they can't understand the personal feature. because it doesn't. See, they're working by material logic, because the general tendency is due to ignorance and due to the false ego coming from that ignorance. Then they, does that make sense? So ignorance is first. Then you have a false identity that's based on that ignorance, right? Because you have to, you know, it's specific. It has to have its uniqueness. So then in that, they take it that if I can't understand it, it's not real. So they're using themselves as the authority. Even though they're based on Shastra and everything, but still ultimately it comes down to, for them, their intelligence, right? For the Karmi, his feelings, his mind. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you get karma and gyan by whether you focus on engagement of the senses through the mind, or not engaging the senses and relying on the intelligence. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, because you see, is the more someone relies on their intelligence, the less they engage their senses. You know, it's just like scientists are famous for being socially dysfunctional, right? Because they're so intellectually absorbed, they can't actually really engage the mind with the senses, right? Because it just doesn't. They don't. They're just so absorbed in the logical, you know, rather than the experiential. So. Their basis of authority is the intelligence, right? And for others, it's the mind, what they feel, how do they like it. But the pious person then is based on Shastra. So they base everything on Shastra, but it's still that there's that impurity of the karma and jnana. That's why pure bhakti means we have to give that up. Because if we say it's for conscious of Krishna, to you know, favorable to Krishna, then that means it has to be free from karma and jnana, because if it has karma and jnana, it's not actually about Krishna. Krishna may be included. It's my karma and Krishna, or my jnana and Krishna. But the point is love means it's exclusive. It's not dependent upon these other aspects. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So either on its gross or subtle platform. Does that make sense? Both, it has to be gone. So therefore, then this platform will always be faulty, because they're trying to measure the Lord by a limited amount of intelligence. Because there is, as far as the element intelligence goes, there's a huge, vast amount within the universe. It's still limited, but it's quite vast. I mean, you're talking, you know, just what we're working with inside, 4 billion miles. And then you have the outside covering, which will be, you know, each one is 10 times thicker. And there's, what is called it, seven layers? Yeah, so that means, yeah, I don't know how you do that. It's 10 to the 7th, no? So that's a huge amount. 10 to the 7th would mean you add 7 zeros, right? So then 7 zeros is 10 million. So that means we have 4 billion inside, and then you have 10 million times that is the covering. You know, in other words, you're not getting out of here. Unless the Lord breathes in, you're not getting out. So in there, there's a lot of intelligence, you know, because there'll be a layer of intelligence. But then the problem comes is that it's still limited, and we only have a small portion of that. Basically, how much you can fit into whatever the size of the body we're in. And it doesn't seem, at least by modern things, that the size of your body generally has anything to do with how much brain you have. Right, like that. Because sometimes it's a famous cliche that the big, huge guy is not smart. Does that make sense? Yeah. So they can't understand unlimited with such a limited amount of intelligence. But because of their attachment, that ignorance, that false ego about their greatness, then they can't understand, because they're trying to be God. So if they're God, of course they can understand. But the problem is they're not God, so they can't understand. So since they can't understand how unlimited can be within a form. They, as you said, they reverse it. Is that the unlimited is the Brahman, and then the form, it's a manifestation of that Brahman. But because you can't have changing in the Brahmani transcendental platform, therefore it must be within in the material concept. But as the scriptures say, Vishnu is the best and the supreme in that, then within the illusion, right, the vikara of the material world, then goodness is the best. And so then of goodness, then Vishnu would be the best of the goodness. So of all the demigods, all the other manifestations, he would be the best manifestation of goodness. So that's their reasoning. Does that make sense? But that's all because they have to attribute a good position to him, because the scriptures say, if they're going to say, they follow scriptures. But at the same time, as their misunderstanding is that this person can't be unlimited, then they have to put the person coming from, extending from the Brahman. But the only thing that extends from Brahman, since Brahman is not exchangeable, is illusion. And even that's not connected to the Brahman, so then they also have a problem. Where does this illusion come from? So they can't explain that. So because they can't accept the unlimited aspects of Krishna, then they end up with, they can't explain illusion, and they can't explain, you know, Vishnu's position. They can't explain, they just can't explain. When you get down to this point, they can't explain. So after this point, just after this point, then they have unlimited things to say to bewilder you. But when you get down to this point, they have actually nothing to say. And that's how you end up with, I think, I'm not sure how many it is, but there's a few different major schools of Mayavadi thinking because of this point. Because the first one was Brahma Parinamavan. Brahma transforms. So because Brahma can't transform, when that's brought up, so that means the Lord, then they come up with these other different ones. Until I think the last one, which is, you know, just some hundreds of years old, then they've come up with this one of that it's all a dream and it's one person's dream. They haven't said, I don't think they've identified which person's dream it is. Like that, because if it is, be sure you don't wake him up, right? You know. So that's their difficulties, because they have so much faith that they're so special that with their intelligence they can do everything. So it's a common mistake. Basically, all conditioned souls make. Just they have a chronic or very, you know, very deep, the worst. Because the last snare of Maya is to think that you're the super soul. So they're on the highest form of being controlled by the illusory energy. You know, so they're special in some way. You got to give that to them. Does that make some sense?
Nowadays, some high-tech people, they came with the theory is that we are, all of us, we are part of somebody else's video game. Means it's unreal. Somebody's playing the game and we're all part of it. And it's so good we can identify it.
So they're saying the Matrix is actually a video game.
Yeah.
Okay. And is it in a locker?
No.
You sure?
That's the basic.
Or we're in a locker.
No, we are in a locker.
Okay, yeah. Okay. We're in the locker. Yeah. Yeah. These things is you can come up with them, because the point is how do you prove that it's not? So unless you have Shastra, then by mental speculation, by logic, you can always, a better logician can always displace a someone of lesser logic. Right? So if you're talking about it's a video game, where will that be coming from? That'll be coming from nerds. Nerds are intelligent. So that means they'll have thought about it and come out with so many different ways so you can't get at it. Right? The only one that might be able to deal with them is a physicist. But in any case, this is, I'm sure, not making the rounds necessarily in the circle of physics, but it's in the, what do you call it, urban kind of thing. And so it works. But, yes. It's just another, yes. So that person must have been a, you know, one of whatever is that last form of Mayavadi, and then not maintaining their enough piety to maintain human life, but not enough to maintain it within the, you know, the Vedic context, have been born in the West, and then being intelligent, you know, being a jnani, then they ended up as a gamer, and so then now they've come up with this theory.
Yes. Can we say that maybe they are stuck in the layer of intelligence?
Stuck in the layer of intelligence. That means they're controlled in theirs because that's their interest. So the Maya just arranges there. Just wherever anybody's attached, that's where they're stuck. You know, so that's their attachment. Intelligence is their attachment. So then they're stuck there. Yeah. So Krishna conscious, the process of becoming unstuck. Right there. Is that where we're okay? Yeah. Similarly, the sky or air is spread everywhere. Air is within a pot, but also touches filthy places and sanctified places alike. In any case, the sky is uncontaminated. The sunshine also touches filthy places and sanctified places, and both are actually produced by the sun. But in any case, the sun is aloof of all filthy things. Similarly, the Lord exists everywhere. There are pious things and impious things, but in the Shastras, the pious things are described as the front of the Lord, whereas impious things are described as the back of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So he's everything, but it's just a matter of if it's front or back. Right, so the front, that's the smiling nice. The back's not necessarily as nice. Krishna's back is nice, but as you extend it into all these things, that where they, you know, what's taken shelter of his back may not be as nice. In Bhagavad Gita 9:4, the Lord clearly says, Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat avyakti murtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshva vastitaha. By me, in my unmanifested form, the entire universe is pervaded. All things are in me, but I am not in them. Right? Everything's within him, because he is everything. But he is a person, his own interest, he's not in them, because he's it's not. Like if we say, my world, it means the world that I'm interested in. It's not the world that others are interested in. Right? So he is a person, he has what he's interested in. He's aware of everything, he's the cause of everything, he's in support of everything. But what he's interested in, that's what he's doing as Bhagavan. And then as Paramatma Brahman, he takes care of all the other aspects. This verse of Bhagavad Gita explains that the Lord is spread everywhere by virtue as a Brahman feature. Everything rests in him, yet he is not there. The conclusion is that without bhakti yoga, without rendering devotional service to the Lord, even an impersonalist cannot understand the Brahma tattva, the Brahman feature. So they only get a glimpse of that. And depending if the yogi is a glimpse of the Paramatma, they can't get beyond that. So they don't actually know the absolute truth in fullness. They only have a part understanding. Like we said, the unlimited and unchanging aspects, that's all they can understand. So that's just part of the understanding of Brahman. In the Vedanta Sutra, it is stated, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. This means that Brahman, Paramatma or Parabrahman, should be understood. In Srimad Bhagavatam, also, the absolute truth is described as one without a second, but he is realized in three features: impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate issue. And in this verse, Lord Shiva confirms that ultimately the absolute truth is a person. It clearly says that Tattvam Brahma Param Jyotir Akasham Iva Vishritam. Here is a common example. A successful businessman may have many factories and offices, and everything rests on his order. If someone says that the entire business rests on such and such a person, it does not mean that the person is bearing all the factories and offices on his head. Rather, it is understood that by his brain or his energetic expansion, the business is running without interruption. Similarly, it is the brain, an energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that carry on the complete manifestation of the material and spiritual worlds. So that's the point, is that we see the person is the main, and then everything else is an expansion. So we see the examples here. But because the impersonalists have taken the position that if whatever it's like here, spiritual must be the opposite, so that's the position. Does that make sense? So that's the misunderstanding. They can't understand it, so they just simply say it's opposite, and then they're happy with that. But in reality, then how special is that? You go to the spiritual world, and everything's backwards from that. Right? You go to the spiritual world. Everybody's got a ridiculous pompadour, and everybody sits there with bug eyes. You know, is that gonna be good? You want to do that eternally, right? You know, so yeah. So there's a problem. The philosophy of monism, explained here very clearly, adjusts itself to the fact that the supreme source of all energy is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. This is described very clearly. It is also stated how the impersonal feature of Krishna can be understood. Rasoham apsukanteya prabhasmi shashi surayoho pranavas sarvavedeshu shabda ke Paurusham Nrishu. O son of Kunti, Arjuna, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and moon, the syllable Om in the Vedic literatures. I am the sound in ether and ability in man. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:8. In this way, Krishna can be understood as the mystic power in everything. Right? So the point is, the monism, it very easily adjusts itself within the personal understanding because it's resting on the personal understanding. And then that pervasiveness and how Krishna then pervades everything through his energies and through his being conscious of it, right? Through his intelligence, through his energies, then there's no problem. But if we take exclusive monism, there's a problem. So that's why Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva, it has a dwait and advait, but they're both simultaneously functioning. Right? So that's the whole point. Is that the personal, the impersonal, the one, the many, like this. Does that make sense? So all that works very nicely together. Yes? Okay. Sutra 1415. The words asat and avyakrita are now explained. Samarkarshat, from appropriateness. Taking all the passages together, asat and avyakrita mean Brahman, right? So again, it's a matter of understanding how they're Brahman, because these words can be used to mean to others, like Atma can refer to the soul, can refer to the body, the mind, the intelligence. Right? So that makes sense. But the aspect is all pervading. Right? So the Atma, the soul, you can say pervades the body. Or we can say the Atmas, the Jivas within the universe are unlimited. They're pervading everything. But the point is they're only within that particular scope. Yes, and they are doing that. But who's pervading the Atma? That's the Paramatma. Does that make sense? So he's the actual one who's pervading everything. Does that make sense? So that's what, like, we take our mind, it pervades everything. Because whatever we see, the mind is going out. We see a tree, the mind actually takes the shape of that tree. So it's going and pervading everything. That's what is there. So what samskaras that you have are those things your mind has pervaded. And if it didn't, you know, it goes by and you don't see it, you know, it's not there in your mind. There's no samskar, right? Or we take the body. So everything we're doing is connected with the body. If we're seeing something, it's with the body. We're hearing something, it's with the body. Right? We say our family is connected to the body. Our house is connected to the body. Our country is connected with the body. You understand? So in this way, you can say all of these are all-pervading. Yes? But they're all-pervading within the context of their definition. But Krishna is pervading all those because he's what makes those things what they are. Does that make sense? Yes? Yes.
In one purport, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that we render service to Krishna with our spiritual body. Mm-hmm. Because material body, as you explained previously, you know, in terms of mind and intelligence, it doesn't have any connection with the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we understand that point?
Well, what Prabhupada said.
Yeah.
Means that you're functioning with the spiritual mind, intelligence, you know, consciousness, the body, like that, but it's working through the medium of what material facility you have. Does that make sense? Because at this point, we're not fully situated in our surup. The surup is there, and so doing service means we're using it, but we're not situated to the point where we're actually aware of it because of our relationship with Krishna. Means it's a generic because we're servant of Krishna. So in that way we're using it, but in a general way. And so until you come to the point where it's very specific, one understands one's position. Right? So that's why Shravana Das means you understand that position of servant. And so we're just getting adjusted to the idea of just service in general. Right? Let alone, you know, to the depth of, you know, the service of the Brajabasis. But that's our, you could say, our ideal. Right? Our goal is to have that service attitude of the Brajabasis. So then that comes to that. Coming to that point, then one naturally, that awakens that position of what kind of, what specific service you want to render. So that will then invoke the spiritual body functioning in its natural capacity. So that's Varanadasa. So getting adjusted to that, where you're able to perform the activities in that that are connected with that service. Right? But that doesn't become perfect until the meditation upon that service connected to Krishna is exclusive. So that's Samadhi, right, in Shravanadasa. Then having come to where you're perfectly situated in always thinking of Krishna in that particular way is always there. That's the exclusive need, no other needs. Then you can move to Apandasa, where then one can actually interact with Krishna in his pastimes directly. That makes sense? And then by being in that position, then that one further goes to the point where it comes to prema. And then you can say, now you've inherited your sarup. Right? So that's called Vastu Siddhi. Right? So in other words, we're functioning with the sarup, but because we're basically identifying with the gross body, still the gross body can't function in spiritual platforms, so it has to use the spiritual body through it to make it work. You know, it's just like the machine doesn't work without the electricity. Does that make sense? So bhakti only works with bhakti. So only with the chit potency. So then it works. Does that make sense? Now when it comes to the point where the consciousness then includes the spiritual form, then that's sarup. Right? Then when we come to the point of, samadhi, and we're able to then function always in that sarup, right? Because the sarup means this relationship to Krishna. It's not just a body. Otherwise, if we see the sarup not connected with Krishna, that's how it gets covered with the material body. So when we come to the point of that sarup is then perfect in its absorption in Krishna, in samadhi, or you come to that point of purva rag, right? That's called sarup siddhi. Right? So the sarup siddhi. Right? Conditioning sarup siddhi.
Mm-hmm.
Then when sarup siddhi comes to its perfection or prema, that's called vastu siddhi. Right? Because then that's the perfection of reality. Because vastu means what's real. Is that something? Yeah.
Just trying to clarify that thing. So from Shravan Das, we will get an idea of our specific identity, and then accepting that identity is a Varna Das.
Yes, and adjusting with that is Varna Dasa. And then when that absorption, and then you have your absorption in Krishna. And so you have five stages of absorption.
Right? That is smart.
Yeah, that's the smart at all. So, it means occasionally thinking and kind of regularly thinking and basically thinking and then always thinking and then some, completely absorption, the concentration. Mm-hmm. So it has that, dhyana and samadhi. And then before that, smriti, anusmriti, and one other one. I don't... Anyone? No yogis here? Okay. So those are just defining there, because one's a devotee, but one thinks, because one has to remember is that thinking 24 hours a day in a deep way.
It's dharan.
Huh?
Dharan.
Dharan is the third one. Okay, smriti, anusmriti, I don't know, unless anusmriti is first. So dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. But then whether it's smriti or anusmriti is first, I'm not sure. Because anu generally means less, but sometimes anu bhava is higher than bhava. So.
Smriti is first.
Huh?
Smriti is first.
So smriti means you occasionally think about it. Anusmriti means it's more. So dharana means then there's a focus. Like that. But then the dhyan means then the meditation is there, and samadhi means that is deep, the meditation. So 24 hours deep meditation, that's the standard of being absorbed in Krishna. That's just the remembering Krishna part. Right? Does that make sense? So always remembering Krishna like that, then naturally, is there anything nicer than remembering Krishna? No. So then one will naturally come to that point of that complete attachment to Krishna, so it'll come to prema. So in other words, it's just a state where you're always remembering Krishna, because he's the nicest thing, the nicest person, the nicest everything. So then it comes to the point where then it's just about him, so it comes to that point of prema. Does that make sense? So it's a very natural scientific thing, but all this is happening just by the association of devotees. We associate with devotees, and therefore then we advance. But it has to be devotees that are in the line of this, not devotees who, or so-called devotees who say they're in this line. So in other words, sahajiyas just won't cut it. Because we're talking about the primary aspect here, of that focus on Krishna, it's about Krishna. We're not talking about the secondary forms. Right? Because what's the difference between being in a spiritual form but not being interested in Krishna, so that's covered by use of that form and the facilities around, in other words, the field of action for your sense gratification. Though it may be technically spiritual, but you're not acting in a transcendental way. And a sahajiya who is acting supposedly within the environment of spiritual activities, but it's still about their enjoyment. What's the difference? So how can we say that this will actually get you benefit? So that's why without the sampradayic aspect, of coming from the pure devotees, then it's not going to work, because it's not about the form. It's not because they sing very nice tunes or play the mridanga really nice or make the emotional faces of absorption in the holy name or things like that, Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that it's, again, they're thinking they're superior because their knowledge and skills within these areas are superior to most. So it's the same thing as someone else who makes the mistake that their knowledge and skills in whatever area it is, then that makes them better devotees. So it's the same problem. Right? Because that's why the razor's edge is there, and if you think it's about the knowledge and skills, you go off to the left, and if you think it's about liberation, you go off to the right. So all these are just various forms of that. Just the difference is here's karmis who claim they're Vaishnavas. That's all. but that's it. So yeah.
I'm just thinking in terms of association. It seems that Shravana is natural, happens in association of devotees. But then the later stages, it's very personal, kind of. So.
But that's not good.
It is good, but where's the association in that? Because we can deviate in our own mind, you know, smart enough.
No, but the point is, by hearing, you're associating. So we
continuous constant.
Yes. It's always going on. It's always going on. Because what are they doing? They're always talking about Krishna. When the residents of Vrindavan are together, they're always talking about Krishna. Like you'd hear the cowherd boys, when they come back, they'd be talking about, you know, they'd be with Krishna, then they go off to their homes, they're talking about Krishna, they tell their parents of what happened today in the field. You know, Krishna killed Bakasura and Vatsasura and this one and that one. And, you know, so they're always, that Leela Smarana is a constant thing. That's the point, is that's what we mean by they're in samadhi. They're always absorbed in Krishna, so the Leela Smarana is always going on. And so everything is seen in connection with Krishna. Like that. So that's the whole point. But it's not what you're remembering Krishna about. It's that you're remembering Krishna. Does that make sense? So here, we're reading Vedanta Sutra, and so then for an hour and 15 minutes, we're absorbed in connection with Krishna. But that's the point, we're connected to Krishna. And so then one's intelligence, one's heart becomes purified. And then one is able to appreciate more and more the finer aspects. Because it's always dynamic. So even when it comes to the platform of prema, that prema keeps increasing. Does that make sense? So that's why even when we get to that platform, we're still going to be following those who are already there. Because they've been there eternally, so they're eternally better. But at the same time, is when you come to that platform, you're perfect, and so it matches nicely because it's all on the eternal platform. It's all on the perfect platform. It's all on prema. But just how much they've experienced prema is so much greater than ours that even if we experience it, you know, eternally, still they've eternally done it more than us. That's why we're always following. We're always servant of the servant of the servant. That's why it's important that's always there. Because the Mayavadis, they think that I'm servant now, but when I come to the platform of realization, I'm no longer servant. I become the guru. So we want to avoid that aspect, is that we're eternally going to be serving these others. Because they know so much better than us. Even though we'll know so much, they still know more. Right? But the point is whatever we know, it's perfect, and we're completely satisfied. That's the thing we have to know. So that's the point, is that it can eternally get better and better and better and better. Does that make sense? You see where these slight things of karma and jnana come in. And so then they get in the way of, they create anxieties for us. You know, will I be happy? Will I be, you know, like that. That makes sense. Yeah.
When we say usually that the devotee, when they leave their bodies, whatever they think, if they think about Krishna, they go to Gokul.
Yes.
Now we also said that they go and they carry with them more or less what the personality they have here.
Not the personality here, the consciousness.
The consciousness.
Personality is connected to here. Your personality here is made up of the universal form.
Yeah. So it means their consciousness, it's not the details they have, it's just the flavor?
It's just the flavor. Yeah, the details are gone, because when the body's gone, that's gone. So it's just the flavor. So that's why it said that it's like having a box that Hing was kept in. You take out the Hing, you wash the box, it still smells like Hing.
It's the level of Baba, we say.
Yes, they'll be on the Brahma-Buddha platform, but what level of that they'll be on, that will be according to what their consciousness was when they left the body. But because there is no material obstacle, that means in that one pastime, manifest pastime in Gokul, then they can come to the platform of prema and therefore be transferred to Goloka. Because what's to get in the way? I mean, other than you know, how you say, relatives and stuff like that there. But the point is, there's nothing material to get in your way. But the point is we don't have the practice to be so absorbed. That's why if our consciousness were really focused on being, developing that pure devotion to Krishna, then we'll get the association of the eternal associates. And then from that flavor, then that will inspire us to move forward into prema so very quickly. So we can see is that there are those who already came to that platform, so when Krishna called the gopis on the night of the rasa dance, they just straight went. Then there are those who tried to go but were stopped, but because of their absorption in Krishna, it came to that point of complete samadhi. That then they, by Yoga Maya's arrangement, were able to get away and went. And then there are those who couldn't get away because they hadn't come to that. So by being locked up, then they came to that position. So it's just a matter of because the point is one will get there, but it's just a matter of how quick. So that's why the more we're focused here, then the better one that will remember Krishna at the time of death, and to it, our position where we start from there is better. Yes, but the main thing that we're worried about here is that if Krishna is not that important to us, we may not remember him at the time of death. You understand? We may be quite, you know, advanced in so many ways, purified and, you know, steady in our service and things like that. But at the same time, as if we get distracted by other things, then we can think of something else. It means the example is given, the children born to devotees. Those are devotees who are basically madhyamas who didn't think of Krishna at the time of death. You understand? Like that.
Technically, we say that the subtle bodies consist of four things: mind, intelligence, kosiva, and chitta.
Yes.
And then we have
polluted consciousness.
Yes. And then we have karma, linga, and stula. So when we go, when we leave our bodies, unfortunately, to think about Krishna, so we carry the karma, linga.
No. The karma is gone.
So all of them are.
Yeah, it's all gone. And then you're just working with the spiritual. But the point is being on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, it's a neutral state. So it's not that attraction and attachment to Krishna are very well developed. You know what I'm saying? It may be, if someone leaves their body on the platform of Asakti, then that attachment's more developed. So then for them, it's just a little bit more of a step. You know, but you're talking about a step within something that's, you know, everything moves very quick anyway. Right? Or they may have taste, or they may be steady. But the point is a neophyte can also remember. But it's just that they got distracted by, you know, the household duties and doing the things and taking care of the children and doing all these kind of things. So they're devotees, they're absorbed in Krishna, but they're also doing all these things. But Krishna's the most important. So when Krishna calls, then that being compared to the other things, then they burn up all their, what was there of what you say, the fragrance left from any karma and jnana. You know, they're pious, they're impious, all these different things. Because it's consciousness is left. They don't have any karma as such. But it's just the flavors are left in the consciousness. Because you're talking about neutral doesn't mean that it's positive in that it's connected to Krishna, but it's still, and it's not negative that there's no connection to the material world, but it hasn't necessarily attained to prema. So whatever level you're at, if you come to the point where, while in this body, you come to the platform of bhava, then through meditation you can perform activities within the spiritual world. But you still have to come to that platform. You know, so generally, someone in that platform, then when they leave the body, they'll go and then continue where they're, go like that in Gokula, and then go back to Golok. And then that is possible, the rare occasion that someone within this body, then in their meditation, they come to the platform of prema. So that's why it says in rare cases, someone after leaving the body goes straight to Goloka. That's because they already developed prema in Gokul through meditation. Like that. So in other words, however far you get in meditation, or if you don't get to that platform, however far you get here in consciousness, if you remember Krishna, you go to Gokul and you continue from there. Does that make sense? And so there, you don't have the material difficulties. But it's not that there's not obstacles. Like, you know, the cowherd boys would like to play all day, but Mother Jashoda won't let them play in the house. And, you know, stuff like that. They have to behave themselves. And so there's always going to be, Mother Jashoda would love to go out to the fields, but she doesn't. She stays in the house. And, you know, so it's not that there's that, but that's to just create the greater attraction. Right? Because Krishna is attracted by the love of the devotees. So, therefore, to bring out more pleasure in Krishna's attraction to the love of devotees means the love of the devotees for Krishna has to increase. Right? And when that increases, it increases Krishna's. When that increases theirs. And then it's that, Prabhupada talks about that transcendental competition, you know, of expression of that affection for Krishna, you know, and that Krishna to the devotee. Is that okay? We're good? No anxieties?
Now we have a new anxiety.
What's the new anxiety?
The remembrance of the Lord at the time of death, it's very important.
But you'll remember whatever is important to you. In other words, the time of death means you naturally take shelter.
Right.
You know, it's just like if you're in anxiety, then you take shelter of, what do you call it? Comfort food. Right? You don't, it's not just any old thing, it's specific things. So, therefore, you take shelter of those thoughts that are comforting to you. So if Krishna is what's comforting to you, then that's the point. But if it's something else, if it's, you know, sitting out on, sitting out on the edge of the hill, you know, there when the sun's, you know, just rising or setting, depending on what mode you're in, you know, in the springtime or in the fall when, you know, you just go on and on and on, and that's the moments for you, then that's what you think of. And then whether you'll be born as a guy who's staying there or you'll be born as one of those flowers that gets that morning sun, that depends on the whole, yeah. So, the whole point is, but, you know, generally, as Krishna says, it'll be human. Like that. So, if it's Krishna is the shelter, then one will go to Krishna. And so we see is when devotees is there, then others are there, kirtan's going on, it's generally mostly talks about Krishna. You know, at these times, generally no one's coming and just talking for jalpa. Like that. You know, so it's just more of an opportunity. Plus, when one sees that that leaving the body is a reality, you know, it means it's like, you know, how you say, it's happening now, not, you know, yeah, sometime, you know, it's happening now. Then you start actually surrendering to Krishna, giving up these attachments, thinking about these and seeing how they can't save you. Because you're leaving. Nothing can save you. The family can't save you. Your money can't save you. Your house can't save you. Your position. Nothing will save you. So then you start seeing that because we know the philosophy and we perform service, so we have a taste for that. Right? To whatever degree. Because there has to be some taste. Otherwise, why do people take up the process? And so then taking that up, then one will start to compare. That no, it's Krishna. And that surrender to Krishna. So it's actually the closer you get, the easier it becomes. You know, that's what I say. The closer you get, the better he looks. Right? You know. Is that?
Maharaj, right? The purpose that we chant is service to Krishna, and also
the purpose to chant is service to Krishna,
and also that we remember Krishna at the time of death.
So that and also that we remember Krishna at the time of death.
Because if you don't,
what about remembering Krishna now?
Yeah, of course. That is the final examination that. So then,
so you're saying all these essay questions we have aren't the final exam? Okay.
No.
The time of death, you just pull out your papers. I wrote all these. Come on. Go ahead.
So, but devotees also say that even though we practice chanting throughout our life, but at the final moment, it depends upon Krishna's mercy only whether we remember him or not.
So then it's up to him. So we don't actually have to try. We just what can we do? It's Krishna willed that I take another birth in the material world, and hopefully it's in a good, nice family, and, you know, in a good part of Bombay, and a good Brahmin family, and we got lots of money, and we're really intelligent, we have good connections, and hey, you know, just happen to be one of the, you know, most wealthy, influential persons, you know, in India. Is that worth saying?
It's the final will. It's the final will.
Because Krishna willed it. It's his mercy, but unless we're trying to get there, what does it say? You take one step towards Krishna, he'll take 10 towards you, but if you take no step, he takes no step. But the point is, you take one, he'll take 10. So if you try to think of Krishna, be absorbed in Krishna, he'll reciprocate. But that's the meaning of free will, is you have to try. This whole thing is, oh, well, what can we do? But that's just... That's not taking responsibility for we have to make the endeavor. It's not saying that we cause it to happen.
No, Maharaj, this question came because of yesterday evening's discussion wherein, you know, Krishna did not give protection to Akrura.
How did he not give protection? Akrura is fine. Now, what is his name? Akrura, Krutavarma, and Shatadanda. Now, Shatadanda, he lost his head. Right? And we're not talking about in the... emotional sense here. Right? Does that make sense? So, Akrura and Kritavarma, he couldn't have caught that. He went to Mithila. Right? Now, from you know, Gujarat side, which is closer, Varanasi or Mithila?
Varanasi is
closer. Akura, they went to Varanasi.
Yes.
He went to Mithila to catch Shatadanva.
Yes.
So he couldn't go to Varanasi?
Good.
Yes. So then why is he not protected? And when he goes to Varanasi, where is he? What's there in Varanasi?
Shivji,
okay. Shivji's there, yes. Shivji's there. Ganga's there. You know, the Dashwamedha Ghat, the Shmarshans are there, fishermen are there, all kinds of things are there. But in specific to Akura, what's in Varanasi?
The jewel.
The jewelry.
The Shamantaka jewel. Because that is what he carried to Varanasi.
Okay. Yeah, but that doesn't need Varanasi. Okay, let us take it back a little bit more. What was the story about Sopalka, his father, and the why he's considered so auspicious? Where did that happen?
Because of the disasters and everything got invited because of his absence.
Sopalka?
Venaris.
Yes, Sopalka. His father of Akrura.
Yes. So where did the special thing happened with Swapalka that they thought that, see, this man creates auspiciousness
in
Varanasi. And what was happening in Varanasi?
Drought.
Drought was happening, but why did Swapalka go to Varanasi?
To get married.
So that means Akrura goes to Varanasi, his family's there. So he just goes from Dwarka with family to Varanasi with family. And Krishna's not taking care?
He's taking care.
So then, what's the problem? Because if he shows favor to him at that time, they'll think it's all about the jewel. And they'll think Krishna actually wanted Satyajit killed and get the jewel and all that. So therefore, they go and all that. So when the calamities happen, then people think it's Akrura. Then the people want Akrura back. Because otherwise, before, they think he's a murderer and all this, and Krishna's implicated. You know what I'm saying? Because when it comes to women and money, then people, it's always going to be complicated. It's always going to be political. Right? Because they'll think it's, you know, this whole thing with because the daughter, the jewel, the, you know, all these things. Right? So that's how it happened in the first place. Because they were frustrated that they didn't get to marry the girl, and, you know, then... Right? So, then who created the the aspect of the calamities?
Krishna.
Krishna, because can there be calamities in Dwarka? Krishna and Balaram lived there.
Mm-hmm.
No. So it's not dependent upon Akrur or on the Samantaka jewel. It's Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So Krishna created them, but it'll be in such a way that the people will think that it's because Akrura is not there.
Mm-hmm.
And so what does that mean? He can bring his devotee back to Dwarka.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So then how is he not taking care of Akrura?
No, he is taking care.
Okay, so that's fine.
Thank you.
Yeah? Okay. Interesting is that this is the discussion we're talking about, Vedanta Sutra. So that's the point, is that it's natural commentaries, the Bhagavatam. So to actually explain all these things, then the Bhagavatam is natural. Yeah?
When Krishna started to reciprocate with us, like we said, we give one step and he comes with 10.
Mm-hmm.
Is it common some feeling of fear?
When fear?
Fear, yeah. When?
Why would there be fear?
Because it's God and 10 steps of God.
Yeah, but you have to understand is we're here and he's in Goloka, so there's quite a bit of distance to make up.
We are here and they are in Goloka.
Yeah, so the distance is quite great, so 10 steps, then you shouldn't be worried about it. You should be happy. Because if you take one step, it'll take you forever to get there. So he's taking 10 steps, it'll be quicker.
Okay.
Right? So in other words,
about prema, so there is some fear that can be. Some
but why would there be fear? Everybody's working very hard to try to find nice situations within the material world where people appreciate them.
Maybe like you want to be rich, and then you
worry that
you get in the lottery, and maybe you feel like, oh my God, now what is this? What is going on?
Yeah, but the point is if you don't want these things, don't buy a ticket. The point is that you've tried all these other things. They don't work. Right? It means all the things in the material world, they don't satisfy the soul. Therefore, it's only when we take shelter of Krishna, that love for Krishna, because what we're looking for is that love for Krishna, but we're trying to find it in the externals of material nature. But it doesn't work. Does that make sense? So it's the natural thing. Maybe we're not used to it and all that, but that's why Krishna it'll deal in a way that will work for us. He won't move things quicker than what we're comfortable with. Right? So, but it's a difference between what we could be comfortable with and how we think we would be comfortable with. There's a difference there, just like desire and need. A difference. So, yes, we could do this, though I may not want to do this, but I could do it. Does that make sense? So Krishna will run it at that point.
So we must be comfortable that what is coming is for us.
Yeah, I mean, do you want it to be for someone else?
No, even we have this difference inside of us about the need and the desire.
That's there, but Krishna is in the heart. You have to remember, as Krishna is in the heart, and he's been in our heart for a long time, since we've come here. So that means whatever is all your different inclinations, desires, Krishna knows that. Even we don't know that. Does that make sense? You know, yeah. You know, so it's like we may like carrots or something, you know, just to eat them and like that. We don't know that we were a rabbit last life, you know, and that somehow or another we got some peels thrown out by the devotees when they were cooking for Krishna, right? And so we ate those, and then now we're a human. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. I guess you can tell by the teeth, right? Yeah, okay. So, we don't know. Krishna knows. Does that make sense? So we may think it's carrots that we want, but it's not. It's just, you know, prasad. But, yes.
I was thinking even the great devotees, like Maharaj Kulakshekhar, then he had those anxieties. That's why that prayer, Krishna, you know, take me now when I'm fully conscious, and then don't, you know, let me, you know, choke on, you know, mucus, bile, and air like that. So it's a kind of a natural feeling. It's not.
Yes, but it's a natural feeling to remember Krishna.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be the we shouldn't be focusing on the fear. We should be focusing on Krishna.
Yeah.
Then it's just something to bring us closer to Krishna. Because in him absorbing like that, then he's remembering Krishna. You know, it's when we get distracted by the secondary, that's where the problem is. But if we're focused on the primary, then no problem. So, no?
Because somehow or other, to remember Krishna, I was thinking, even in a fraction of a moment, we have to come to that point of samadhi, which
right.
is quite an advanced level. Because this is the only... We can't remember anything else. We have to remember Krishna. Exclusively,
yes.
as you mentioned.
But it's natural that you will remember, you will come to a point of focus. It's just a matter of what you value is what you focus on. So if you value Krishna, you make Krishna the center of everything, then Krishna is who you'll focus on. That's the point. It's not that the point of being one-pointed, that will happen. It's just a matter of what you focus on. You know, it's like we said, like we had heard that, I don't know about now, but this was, I'm not sure if it was late 80s, early noughts, that it was one thing, a statistic, that when they would recover the black boxes from the crashed airplanes, that the last thing that the airline pilots would say was, "Mommy." So in other words, they would try all their things, and when they saw that's it, they'd just take shelter of their mother. So it's just a matter of taking shelter of Krishna. Is that okay? Yeah.
Yesterday in Krishna book, I have read one interesting thing that impressed me, because I understood that I have never thought about surrender in this way. Prabhupada says that we cannot surrender until we are clean, until we get rid of all our sins. So that means that we cannot, usually we hear surrender, surrender, surrender.
Yeah, but that means you make the effort to surrender.
But we cannot do it until we are clean. So
yes.
That means that, is it right to think that I should express my wish to serve Krishna more and more, studying philosophy, associating with devotees, and then one day, and one moment, when everything is clear, and I will understand how, and I will surrender. It will be very natural.
Yes.
And I will get rid of all fears, all such stuff that were discussed here.
Yes, but the focus is on surrender to Krishna, not on... Means, in other words, the Krishna and the devotional process, that's what we focus on. That itself will get rid of the sin. We don't have to focus on the sin and trying to get rid of the sin. We just have to be willing to let go of that sin as we get purified. Right? So it means we're aware that we don't do things that we shouldn't. But it's not that we're focused on that. You understand? Because that's what makes the jnanis very dry, because they just try to give up. Or the religionist very hard-hearted, because they're just following rules, but there's no higher element other than their satisfaction they'll get. But so they have to focus on those and work very hard. That's why the process is just so difficult. Well, in bhakti, it's just a matter of thinking of Krishna, being absorbed in Krishna. Because if you think of renunciation, it's not that renunciation helps you. But if you think of Krishna, Krishna helps. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why it's sadhana, it's practice.
Maharaj, it's possible to say that the devotees who are following the devotional process, he is free from sin?
Free from sin? Yes, but he is not necessarily free from attachment to sin. Because those are reactions you get from your previous actions, right? Because action and reaction. So that may be gone, but your inclination towards sin, that's what you have to give up. Does that make sense? You know, that's why the example is given of the elephant. They take a bath and they come out and throw dirt on themselves again. Right? You know, or the example of you know, someone's a thief, they get punished, and then they know that there's punishment, but then they do it again. It's because that's the attachment to it. That's why it's said that all these processes, they can get rid of three aspects of sin, but not the desire. So bhakti will get, you know, those others will go away. That's not the big part. The big part is the seed of sin. Right? Because that's the desire. When you do something, then the desire to do that again is also generated. Right? So in other words, you act on the seed, it sprouts, but it also produces another seed. Does that make sense? So the desire to do that again is there. So that's what's unique in devotional service, that those seeds get nullified, so they don't sprout. You know, does that make sense? So that's what you're working with. That's why I was saying it's not just about the sin. It's about the, so this thing is, oh, they've done this, we have to do this to get rid of the sin. That's material. You know, that's spoken by, that's the, you know, the sixth canto is about that point. Because Purukkot Maharaj gives that example, is that it's just like the elephant taking a bath. So this whole need for prayaschitta, what do you call it?
Atonement.
Huh?
Atonement.
Atonement, retribution, you know, all this thing is they did this to me, we're going to get them back, they should suffer, they should punish. These are all material. Even if devotees are involved, they're purely material. They're nothing spiritual about them. Because we're thinking that no, the sin is actually the real substance. No, devotional service. It's an illusion within an illusion. Material life, material condition is illusion. And so that someone's done something wrong, that's wrong within illusion. So what's the problem? Krishna consciousness. You improve the Krishna consciousness. That's the solution. That will get rid of it. But we think no, they should be punished, they should be this, they should be that. And that will get rid of it. But that's 100% material. Not even, no, but we're engaging Krishna. So, no, it's just material. It's just 100% upfront material. Right? So, therefore, for the devotees, it's about what situation will create more Krishna consciousness. What will create, you know, better application and practice of Krishna consciousness. That removes sin. Because what you're removing is the desire, because the other part's an illusion anyway. It's not a big deal. You know, it's like saying, oh, in your dream last night, you dreamt about this, so you should be punished for that. That's not very nice. You know what I'm saying? It's not very intelligent. So the point is then what can you do when you're awake to see that you don't dream like that? You know what I'm saying? So it's about Krishna consciousness. So this modern thing of stopping services and taking all these things, these aren't solutions to anything like that. When Prabhupada was here, people just were put into situations where they get better association and be more absorbed, because that was spiritual. But nowadays, pure material, that's how we use atonement. Because it's just, the difference is it's not the Vedic recommendation, it's just the modern mental speculative concept. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. We have to be very, very careful to not think that sin itself is the substance. No, it's also part of the illusion. Just like our conditioning, all this is not. But is devotional service. One has to be aware, okay, these are person's inclinations, so how to put them in a situation where those inclinations can come up. Like, let's say someone steals money. Don't put him around money. Give him some other services or have someone else there that's stealing. So when they deal with it, they don't have to actually, there's no opportunity. You know, whatever is going to keep them fully engaged. Does that make sense? So if they're an accountant, yes, they keep doing the accounts, but they only deal with the books. They don't deal with the money itself. Then they can't take anything. But they're engaged in their service. Does that make sense? Then that's actually you do something positive. And so by doing that positive, that's then what's going to remove all these impurities from the heart. So the sin itself is not there because you're engaged in devotional service. Where's the sin? But the polluted consciousness, that's the thing you have to worry about. So that's why devotional service will purify the consciousness. Okay? Yeah?
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki Jai. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai. Jai Nitai Gaura Premanam.